You're listening to the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky and me, Mike Catherwood.
That's right. We're doing it this time. So check it out. Thanks for listening.
You live.
Yes, Mike, you live.
Yeah.
It's This Life with Dr. Drew's special You Live episode with my co-host Michael Catherwood. You can find us on KBC 790 AM Monday through Friday, noon to 3. There's a podcast version of it, too, on KBC790.com, I think, or KBCradio.com. We should have checked that out before
we should work on that. Yeah.
Yes, we should. Yes, we should. Also want to thank our friends at Alliant, the CSPP, the California School of Professional Psychology. Again, I've worked with them for years. Appreciate their support, and I appreciate the professionals that they have put out into the world, the high quality organization. Also, we have Mike and I coming up a Swole Patrol. Those of you that watched the last Facebook Live saw our friend with Vinny Tortorich. We'll spin out of this Live into a Swole Patrol as soon as we get that up. We've got lines running. Do call us.
Real quick, just about that, I want to say that, you know, with This Life, obviously it's about mental health and recovery and all these things about living a healthier life.
But Swole
Patrol's
with Swole
Patrol, we want to focus more just on the fitness and health aspect of it, and we will do that down the road.
Yeah, this is more blended here at You Live. We'll do some fitness and stuff, and some health, and some mental health and whatnot. And make your comments on Facebook Live as well, or check out YouTube. We're there as well. And it is my privilege to welcome Eden Sassoon in here today.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Her philanthropic effort is Beauty Gives Back, right?
Her body gives back.
Beauty Gives Back.
Hey.
She has a great salon that First Day of Love was just raving about.
Eden by Eden Sassoon.
How did you not name it Garden of Eden?
Because that's so typical.
I know.
It's too.
I'm a basic bitch. I know.
Keep it up.
Also, Instagram Live. You can find Eden's Instagram there. Check it out.
She's going Facebook Live right now.
Oh, she's going Facebook Live. Okay. Eden, where should we start this conversation?
Oh my God, there's so many ways we could go.
How you
been? I've been amazing.
You look great. Everything good?
I was on vacation for – I'm always on vacation.
Nice.
Life is a beautiful – this one's funny.
I was seeing your pictures. I was like, yeah, I like that.
Well, I went with the family, my brother, you know, really good thing. Amazing.
Where'd
amazing.
You go?
And I was happy to be back to the Virgin Islands.
Nice.
Yeah. It was really, really.
Do you train when you're traveling?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I went and I thought to myself, God, this trip is like 20 some odd days. If I don't work out. So I brought my little Pilates ball, my ring, my weights, and then I found a gym.
Is it hard to get buff guys to do Pilates? Because I will
no,
do
No, that's
it.
My favorite thing in the world. Do you want to come?
I do. My wife had convinced me a couple times, and I was like, oh, come on. This
did you go? She obviously didn't convince you if you didn't go.
No, I did. And I was really shocked at how hard it was.
Thank you.
Because it does not look hard, but it is very hard.
It's very hard. Yeah. That is my most favorite thing is when you see a man who has these larger muscle groups, and that's pretty much all you use in the gym, you get them in the Pilates on this reformer, and they're just lost.
Yeah.
And I don't make fun. I just am like, oh, yeah. So now you finally understand what your real body, you know.
And what makes it hard? Holding the isometric or holding a position or?
Well, you're using muscles that you don't use in the gym. Mm. Really tiny muscles that you probably don't even realize.
Yeah, the
exist.
Only really tiny muscle I use usually is my penis.
I feel sorry for your wife.
Yeah, it's very small.
Though we had dinner with her yesterday, and what did she say?
She didn't say that.
No, she didn't say that. In fact, she seemed to be like have a
walking
preference.
Walking hard? Like
no, it's a preference that way because he talked about having some sort of transposition or some sort of
no. What had happened was you made some contact. Oh no, I made a comment about how I'm in recovery as well. So
I was going to ask.
I was cheersing with water, and I know that the old adage is that it's bad luck to cheers with water.
No sex for 7 years or something.
One of the girls who was there was at the table was from North Africa, and she said, in my culture, it's believed that you will have bad sex for 7 years if you cheers with water. And my wife immediately said, well, that makes a lot of sense.
She's funny. I like
her. But then something else. How did we get into the small penis
because
conversation?
Because Drew was talking about thyroid things. My wife has Hashimoto's.
Yeah, I have thyroid.
She does?
Yes.
Nice. Well, I should get you guys in contact. She was saying that I'm concerned about taking this T3 because of maybe the bad reaction. And Drew said, but if there is a diagnostic need, it'll level out. You won't feel those bad. You use it. And I said, much like my penis enlargement surgery, there's a diagnostic need for it. And my wife did not disagree. She was like, yeah.
No. She said, no. She said, no, no need.
Isn't there medicine for that, Dr. Drew?
To enlarge your penis?
I don't know.
No.
It's called being black.
No.
No?
No.
You know, I talk about that. I'm scared to go there.
Listen, there's a lot of stereotypes that I go, well, it's just not nice. It's terrible. We should do away with that. It's silly. Like, women are...
No, worse that is a
black
real guy, thing.
I have showered with a bunch of different teams all my life growing up. And black guys almost always have gigantic wieners.
But it is a stereotype, though. It is a stereotype.
Sure.
And how do you think that makes feel the amongst our African-American peers that don't have such a thing?
Yeah. Well, so do better.
All right. I don't know how we got so far off course here, but we are off course.
It always goes
so
to sex.
Listen, it's like the Chinese guys I went to high school with that weren't good at math. I was like, well, that's on you. Step your game up.
I won't even finish my thought on that.
So, Eden, Mike, tell her your recovery story real quick.
Yeah,
so
I want to know.
I will be clean 15 years next month.
Congrats.
Thank you, sir. Ma'am.
It's a big deal.
I was just, you know, very, very basic kind of American addict.
No, you're pretty hardcore.
No, but my point is well, there wasn't anything exotic. I started off drinking way too young in high school, like, or junior high.
Where'd you grow up?
Like Pasadena area, okay. Right down the street. And then weed, and then once I found cocaine, that was like, well, this is the best thing that's ever happened.
How old are you? You're
38.
Oh, you're younger, and you found cocaine. I never, ever, ever found cocaine.
I for me, it was meth first, because it was the 90s in Southern California. Meth was really big, and I like that. I like it a lot, actually. And then somehow, it shifted. Right around 2000, it became more in vogue to do cocaine, and it just was around more. And then I started smoking cocaine, and that was the best. That, to me, it was like perfect for me.
But then you were using opiates on top of that.
Yeah, that's when it got really dark. It's when I started speedballing, and I was living on the East Coast at that time. That, like, towards the tail end of my use, hopefully forever, I was starting to smoke heroin and cocaine at the same time. That's when it got really dark. That's when I was going to going to the hospital every day, almost every other day.
How did you not shoot drugs? Or did you?
I did.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, I mean, I just... I like to smoke stuff. I don't know if anybody out there in recovery or active users get it. I just really – there was something extra fulfilling about that big plume of smoke and the communal aspect of – because when I noticed, like, junkie friends of mine, they would do it.
They'd isolate.
They would do it together, but it was very – there was like they'd go on the other side of the room. Even if they'd shoot each other up, they'd tie off and silent. There's something very communal about passing a pipe around and smoking. And
so why don't you just get barefoot and play guitar?
We're discussing the positive attributes of crack, crack smoking.
Well, and another positive attribute of crack is like it got me – I'm not a resourceful fella. I really learned a lot about chemistry, like really nailing down my crack rock. I learned a lot about like basic salts and bases and acids and stuff. Yeah,
and how to refine it.
Yeah,
did you do free base, which is the other way to do it?
And I can afford it.
It's that much more expensive to free base.
Yeah, and it's just like it was. You know,
you had to buy the powder cocaine.
Right.
And make
this isn't 1987. Yeah. You know, it's not like free base was all that readily available. Yeah. I mean,
wow.
See, see what you've been missing.
I mean, I'm learning a lot.
And you. This is not the good kind of learning. Well, and
hey, all learning is learning.
You asked.
I will ask anything and take an answer.
You've been in recovery a good amount of time too, though, right?
I'm coming up on 5 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And
it's beautiful life.
Much more difficult, I think, for you because
why?
Because when I got clean, I was 23. Just turned 23. It was like my third, fourth go at it.
Right.
I didn't have anything going for me. I was broke. I was living on people's couches.
But
my parents were ashamed of me. No,
well,
it does because
I don't know
if I had money and friends and a job and if I wouldn't have just kept on using. Yeah, I was very forced to confront the aspect that I could not go on living like this.
Well, I kind of just woke up on the edge of my bed and said, "Hey, you know what? I heard my dad's voice. I heard my higher power, and they're like, you're done."
Really?
Yeah.
No, nothing was happening.
Your dad had passed.
Thank God I was dressed.
Your dad had passed?
Yes.
Oh, that's really
were you hallucinating your dad? I mean, you actually heard it?
No, I actually was getting up dressed. I was completely hungover, of course. And I'm thinking, oh my God, 5 o'clock's going to come around sometime. Get on your hike. And my dad's like, get on your tennis shoes. Go hiking. Because I would exercise every day like I did. I would exercise drunk, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And so I went on the mountain and I heard like, you're done, this is it. And I was crying and I kept crying and crying and crying and I didn't know what was going on. And this woman just intervention and bam, I went to that day.
You went outpatient. Straight, right?
It was really amazing.
Usually there's stuff going on in your life that allows you to hear that voice.
Well, yeah, I'm very. I've always been open to energy.
No, no, but I mean that a lot of crap going down that makes you open to hearing it. Like, oh yeah, there's a lot of bad things happening. So.
I agree with you, but I, at least in my case, and I don't want to speak for Eden, but a lot of times in the moment, you're not aware of that other stuff.
Right. It's that's why I was asking.
The other stuff is kind of in the line.
That's exactly right.
You know what it was? It was me I'm really in touch with energy, and it was me feeling the loss of two men that I love, and they had just gone at the same time. And so for me, it was just pain. It was pain, and I heard the answer to what was going to create more of a loving environment.
One of the things I've noticed in people when they find that moment of change, mm-hmm. is they'll often have developed a relationship with a new kind of person. Was there anybody new in your life that you're sort of hanging with and helped you sort of see yourself through a new pair of glasses?
No, that was always me. I was always searching for more. I was always looking for
no new relationships.
Was there a lack of people in your life?
No, I had just opened Eden by Eden Sassoon. I have two children. I have a ton of friends because I grew up here and I'm very social. I had a relationship that was going for 2.5 years. We had just he's 15 years younger. We just did in vitro. I mean, I had life.
Done it then, or you've just done it now?
Then. There was everything that was happening. And then when I lost my father, bam, that little girl that, you know, kept searching for, oh, it's okay, everything's going to be okay, daddy will take care of everything. Nope, that was it.
Yeah, a lot of people who have very famous, very successful fathers, it goes one of two ways. It's either like I despise him and there's this bitterness, or it seems like from the research I've done about you that you really, really idolize and worship your father. You know, worship the ground he walked
on. He was my daddy. Yeah. I didn't really realize what Sassoon meant growing up.
Was just normal, right? Yeah. That was just the way life
just
was.
Your name.
And yeah. I'm very kind and loving and humble and courteous to everyone. I'm not. We are one. We are the same. There was nothing different from growing up as his daughter than somebody else, in the positive sense of that. So I would always do for it for everybody. But I think watching people and the way that they treated him and the way he responded made me who I am. I got to see a man who literally had everything but worked for it, treat people with the just utmost respect. And so I am no different.
And there was never a sense of like, well, I don't want to go into the world of hair or beauty because my dad's like a kingpin.
I don't do hair, and I own the salon only because I wanted to carry on the legacy as I see fit, not as the company who owns Sassoon see fit, which is coming from a very loving, open, who are we, what do we feel, what does beauty look like to you? Yeah, just very, and health. He got me into Pilates at a very young age, and so opening studios is, I'm just paying forward what I learned from that man.
A lot of people who, you were saying that you were exercising even heavily, even during your time of drinking and using. A lot of people who are like that, and I know a lot of people in recovery that are fitness nuts. Almost all of them, to a T, myself included, say there was a time and a place where I replaced my drug of choice with
fitness.
Training.
Oh, for sure.
Did you ever get to that point?
Well, I started, I think, before I would gotten to really my alcohol. I trained, that was my life. That was everything. That is still my addiction. That is what makes me, if I don't exercise on one day, 2 day, on the third day, forget it.
I want to ask you, because then I could see we actually have, luckily, we have a call along those same lines, but for myself, and I know for a lot of people I've talked to, especially very fit, very attractive women that are in recovery, eating disorders is a huge problem. The two seem to walk in the same shadows.
Yeah,
almost often.
I mean, I would say it's taken me my entire life. I got sent to a Weight Watchers, Fat Farm is what we called it as a kid when I was 12, and it really messed with
me. You got sent, meaning like you better go?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I didn't have a choice. And that was, and I did not like camp, and I did not want to go away from home, and I got sent. And so from a very young age, I wasn't good enough, and I had this relationship with food. And hiding food in my closet and McDonald's and things that my father would never eat, and that I would, it's till this day I still have a relationship with food. I'm very aware, and I try to be healthy, but I know when my emotions, when I want to shut down, when I want to escape, I'm going to go and eat that entire pizza.
Right. I wonder why that is. And why? Because she's saying, it's like she's talking through my brain.
Yeah.
It's that I think that I have a very healthy relationship with food, But there is no middle ground. I either am counting my macros and eating broccoli and egg whites every day, all day, or I'm destroying pints of ice cream, washing it down with pizza.
I just have to give up ice cream.
And excessive. Anyone who I talk to, even guys like super ripped bodybuilder guys, if they're not in recovery, they don't relate to that. There's something about the addict brain that carries over to
the addict brain, and then also the unregulated brain, which is what motivates some of the substitutes in the first place, right? Yeah. If you're unregulated, which is sort of, you know, the challenge of trauma and whatever else happens when we're growing up, that we don't regulate well or effectively, and so, you know, food, substances, those are ways we regulate. Sex,
money, all of it. I mean, it's all. But you know what's interesting? Because obviously there was a topic on what I had to deal with last year as far as reality show, and they attacked me for
on Beverly Hills Housewives.
Yes, I could admit it. Beverly Hills Housewives.
What did they attack you for?
My medication. And so since after my sister passed away from an overdose,
attacked you for it?
Yeah. You're sober and you take Lexapro. And I'm like, yes, I do.
Lexapro? And that doesn't seem like something.
Then they must not understand what sobriety is.
And Klonopin for anxiety.
There you go.
So, and I said, well, no, I'm very open and I have a doctor.
But your doctor doesn't understand sobriety then, period.
Well.
I'm very opinionated about that.
No, please, by all means. And I think there's a point where I'm willing, although when I fly, I get anxiety. I would rather save myself from anxiety and take 0.5 milligrams of 0.5 of Klonopin than have to think, where's the food? Literally, I will eat on a plane. If this plane's going down, I will eat as much as I possibly can. Or like I used to, drink until I was that one person on the plane.
What about dealing with the fear of flying?
I actually have tried that. I flew on my girlfriend's private plane. And I sat up with the captains, and it helped a lot.
But they loved it. They're like, okay, you know, join us, please. Somehow, I don't think those captains would allow me to do the same thing for therapy.
Why?
Because I'm a
dude. You have a big mouth?
I'm a dude. No. I'm not a hot chick.
You're a good-looking guy. They probably would have loved it. You just ask them questions, guys.
Off a couple Hummers for a free flight on a private jet. I will.
Susan, any questions on Facebook?
Okay, I guess I have to get into the mic.
Well, hold on. If you don't have one ready, Ruth wanted to ask a question on the phone that is relating to what we're talking about right now.
So. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Hello, Ruth.
Hi.
Hi, Ruth.
Hey there.
Hi, Ruth.
Hello, you live.
You live, woman.
You live.
I have to ask, when you were a baby, like when you were under three, did people constantly say, hey, it's baby Ruth?
Mm. What do you mean under three? I still get that.
Yeah, okay. All right, good. I'm glad.
Satisfying. Somehow satisfying.
Love a good pun.
Yeah. Wah, wah. Okay.
Okay. So here's my question. I'm in long-term recovery. Wait, back that up. Trauma survivor, alcohol, drugs, cutting, eating disorder, you know, the whole standard shebang. In recovery, I've been sober from alcohol and drugs for just over 13 years. Have a therapist, take my antidepressant. You know, mostly everything's good. I think in the last 3 years, I've had 2 incidences of binging and purging. The last one was in December. So it's, you know, been, you know, I'm not going to say long-term recovery, but it's been a while. But whenever I get super, super stressed, my brain automatically tells me that I want to binge and purge.
Right.
And my question for Drew and the panel is, when did those thoughts go away?
Maybe not ever.
Yeah, I think for me it would be how do we accept them and deal with them.
Right. And dealing with is the key thing, is that you need sort of a procedural approach to when you have these things. There's things you do, much like if, you know, let's say you're around alcohol or something and you're an alcoholic, you call your sponsor, you call your peers. There's things you do to interrupt this becoming a behavior. Right. And the key is, much like every other, you know, behavior, it has momentum. Once you start doing it, you start connecting the dots and doing more of it. I want to just put a little fine point on what she said about the so-called trifecta. Well, we used to call it the trifecta of eating, cutting, substance. You're right. It is the usual shebang that when you're a trauma survivor, oftentimes cutting, eating disorder, substance, particularly if you have the genetics for addiction, go together. And are you getting specific trauma therapy, Ruth?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And just stay with that. Just, you know, figure out, to talk to your therapist about some sort of procedural something you can do, somebody you can call, some support, some something, when you get these sorts of impulses. And in the meantime, just keep reading your trauma work, and those impulses are much, much less likely to occur. Really, it is, again, it's those are old impulses associated with unregulated affect states, right? And if you're regulated more, you're not going to get those impulses breaking through. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I was just wondering, because like, I don't crave alcohol, I don't crave drugs, I don't crave cutting myself, but this one just,
yeah, I know.
Every so like that for me right now, that's one of the ways I know, like when I'm reaching my stress.
Good. Well, that's, it's a sign.
I would like for it to not happen at all. So I'm like, please tell me, like, over time it'll go away.
I'd like cravings to not happen.
Right.
You know? I mean, a lot of it is just eventually getting.
Yeah, over time it goes away for the most part.
But I think the more you push it away and say, I don't want this to happen, it will. And so the more you become of an acceptance with, okay, this is something that I have to deal with. And figure out again, like.
I'm wondering, it just occurs to me just talking to Ruth, if some of the more stuff you're already into, Pilates or meditation or other kinds of modalities she could explore. I mean, she's doing all the right things from the mental health standpoint. 13 years into it, maybe it's time now to
add
some stuff.
Yeah, are you physically using your body to emotionally move through this? Because that works.
Right. I've been an athlete my whole life. I'm a runner, half marathons, training for my first full. Okay. So I definitely put the body to good use.
Okay.
I do right now, I'm doing yoga every day as part of my training. I don't think of it as spiritual, but it is, I'm at least going through the motions.
I'm not saying spiritual, it's just important. It's another means of, all this stuff is bodily based, right? Everything's coming out of our bodies into our brain ultimately. This thing is embedded in a body. And the body's creating a lot of the unregulated stuff that comes out. So as much as you can get into your body, so to speak, it sounds a little hokey.
No, see, I am that person that he's calling hokey.
No, it sounds hokey the way I describe it.
No, but I believe that we are just energy and we're stuck in this body. And so the more that you can grasp that energy or find a way to release it, whether it be acupuncture, whether it be yoga, massage, I mean, I do everything, whether it be working with healers that can kind of connect and get into places that you've probably that you are aware of maybe but never been able to go to and release it, whether that be through crying or physical. Like I've gone through some really intense body sensations that things, energy is coming out of me and it's directly linked with a past experience.
Have you gotten into that? Have you found your way in?
I think it was through the pain and as a child.
I mean, how did somebody get you to the re-experience all that?
Oh, there's many different ways. Sometimes in church, it happens a lot.
So you'll just find it. It'll express itself.
It just comes out.
See, it's interesting to me because with patients and stuff, I always find that to be an interpersonal experience when those things, because, you know, we co-create our relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's sodium and there's chloride and together it's sodium chloride. Mm-hmm. Humans are the same way. We have Eden, we have Drew, and together we form this thing in between us that's called the relationship. And that tends to help people, you know, what I experience about Eden, I can reflect back to her and that may release some of the, what you call energy.
Mm-hmm.
Was it that kind of a thing or were you just sitting by yourself?
Well, not by myself. I was just in Cabo. I do these destination for healthy living. And I sat after our Pilates class and I was meditating. And through this meditation, all these emotions, started coming up.
Meditation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it was a 3-hour process.
Susan, any more on Facebook?
Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you, Ruth. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good luck with everything.
He waits till I'm totally not looking.
You were looking at your phone.
No, I know. I'm scrolling around and looking and sharing all over the place so people can see this.
I'm on Instagram Live. You guys have questions?
Yeah, and the Instagram guys. What do you got?
While Susan's looking, you talked about how it's hard to get guys to do Pilates, like, you know, macho men.
No, it's not hard. All I have to do is, hey, you want to come to Pilates? Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, it's motivating, for you. But what about meditation? Because I find people who are reluctant to meditation almost always are. There's the type of people who are like, look, I'm going to keep going with this. I'm disciplined enough to do it or whatever. Then there's people who just see it as nonsense. And I wonder how to kind of transfer people over because I find it a really, really valuable tool.
I agree with you. And I think that being in your head is not a great place to be, especially for us.
Here's a question. Please. I'm on depression meds, but sometimes I have suicidal thoughts. How can I get them out of my head?
Do we know how old a person it is? Did it happen before the medicine?
Are you on the right medicine?
Yeah. Here's the thing to keep in mind. The adolescents can have an exacerbation of suicidal thinking and even cause suicidal thinking being on an SSRI.
Yeah.
And it can be dose-related. It can be drug-related. So it's something to keep an eye on. Be very careful with an adolescent with an SSRI. With an adult, usually it reduces suicidal ideations. If you're noticing persistence or an increase in suicidal ideation, you have to call your doctor immediately. Again, we discussed with Vinny how treatment and medical management is a navigation. It's not, here's your medicine, you're fixed.
Yeah.
That's
it's
what
you.
Karen said.
Who said?
That's what Karen said right below. That was the next comment.
That's what she said about
call
being
your
a
doctor.
She said call your doctor.
Yeah, call your doctor because yeah. That is a medical emergency. Suicidal thoughts are, depression can kill people through suicide. And that's a medical emergency. So you call your doctor, I'm having suicidal thoughts. Now, if you have a plan or you have an intent, then you go to emergency room.
It's different. Yeah.
It's really serious.
I mean, I also think that even medicated, I'm on Wellbutrin. It's been like my third crack at different drugs, SSRIs. I have suicidal thoughts pretty much every day, you know.
In a particular context or anything?
Yeah, but my point is that
can you describe it?
I've been very open with my doctor. I have long conversations with him about it. Lorne Michaels, I call my shrink.
Are these thoughts like just your kind of silly imagination that thinks, hey, what if I did this and that would be kind of cool?
They become fleeting because I take control of it and I realize they're just thoughts. But it doesn't change the fact that they occur with relative frequency. And I didn't even realize they came with that kind of frequency until I was talking to my therapist with my wife and he said, you know, if you're experiencing suicidal thoughts, we need to talk about that. I was like, well, I am.
Did he say it to you in Hebrew or an extra heavy Israeli accent?
This close to Hebrew. And he said, how many times? I go, like, how many times a day? He goes, what do you mean? I go, like, how many times a day? I don't know, four or five. He's like, well, wait a second. You're having suicidal thoughts four or five times a day? I go, yeah, but, you know, it's like it plays out in my movie screen of a brain, and then
You're being vague about describing it. I hope it's not for a reason. But, so let me just drill into it a little bit. You mind?
Sure.
And Eden, I want you to help me with Mike here. And maybe
gladly.
It's your Instagram Live people.
Well, it's different questions. Let's help him.
In my own funk. That's
okay,
how I do it.
So describe when. Give me one. Because it happens four or five times a day, you must know that you can certainly pull out.
Is this pre or post orgasm? Sorry.
Oh, well, I mean, all thoughts are post-orgasm for me because...
Is it immediately post?
Well,
you're always post-orgasm.
I'm always post-orgasm because I beat off so much. So.
All right.
Okay.
worth it just for Susan.
So here's the deal. So give me the last one. When did it come on? What time of day?
Earlier today, trying to fix my daughter's trampoline, use of a gun.
You imagine using a gun?
Yeah.
Just all of a sudden it pops into your head? Or are you frustrated doing the...
No, sometimes I'm even in a perfectly fine mood. And
then what happens to you physically?
It's almost like when they, like on The Biggest Loser, when they talk about cravings, I just get control of my feelings as opposed to allowing them to... control of my thoughts. And I do almost like a mini cognitive behavioral therapy where I have to kind of back up where it comes from.
Where does it come from usually?
Out of nowhere, and then I think it's a laziness of my kind of like regulating my emotional states, where I almost get kind of comfortable, like lethargic with my
well-being.
I mean,
so well-being triggers negative
because I'm a depressed guy. I do have to put in work sometimes to just feel happy.
I don't know that you're on the right medicine. You should not be feeling this, and you should not be having these thoughts. And I've been on medication since my sister passed away. And there are times where I go through slight depressions because I'm on such a low dose. He's like, take a half. And I feel, all right, my serotonin's up, and it's kicking in.
I had suicidal thoughts last weekend when I had that eye procedure, when I was wearing these dark glasses.
That's
last
because
week.
Your face was falling off.
I literally said to myself, if this goes on indefinitely, I will have to kill myself. Yeah. That's why. So for me, it's something that you do when you're really in pain.
Well, I am.
So,
and that's why I say I get lethargic because I have to listen. But I'm constantly suffering from the idea that I just don't. There's no real reason for me to be here, and that I'm not a good person, and that no one likes me.
Is this leftover?
Where's your gratitude list? You're an amazing person. You said you're married. How many children do you have?
I have one.
One child.
Yeah.
You're a great looking guy. You're very healthy.
Thank
you're
you.
Smart. You're funny.
He's searching for this.
You're sitting in a room
he's looking for this.
Next to me. Where the hell's your gratitude list, buddy?
All I'd have to do is drop my pants, and those compliments would go right away.
I get it. I beat myself up too. But it's the minute I step into, I am so blessed. And what can I do for that person?
Well,
then that's all gone.
She's right.
You're right on the money. And that's my point, is that that's how I have to kind of regulate my feelings moment to moment, is that I have to remind myself, stop feeling this way. It's just weird thoughts.
Do you ever do a gratitude list?
Yeah, sure.
Last year?
I mean, I used to have an app where I do it every day, where I'd sit there. But I don't consistently do it.
Does that help? Not really.
Yeah. I mean,
is this all shame and guilt from your previous behavior?
I think so. I think there's a lot of the isolation that was surrounding my use. You know, it got me to believing pretty, you know, I guess in a visceral way, more so than an intellectual way. I conditioned myself to believe that I was just this person that was really, like, my survival was futile. And then I think a lot of sexual trauma leads me to the – I'm very, very ashamed of, like, the idea that I created this world where I think it's only gotten worse since I became a parent, because I started to transpose myself into my parents' point of view. And I think about, like, what a pile I am to have created a world where I'm so disappointing to my parents. And I think, like, how I would feel if my daughter was me. I would be so ashamed.
What about just living in the moment again and being really grateful for being you? The past is the past.
And, by the way, let's say you have a child who does take a dark journey and gets out of it. You'd be so grateful for that's who they are and that's their thing.
Yeah.
And
probably.
Look at them.
Probably, yeah.
So let's take a little break on that happy note. We're going to talk about our friends at Alliant, and we're here with Eden Sassoon. Give us your calls. Check out your comments on Facebook and on Eden's Instagram Live. We'll see you in a second.
Well, one of the great parts about working in recovery is seeing former patients successfully move on. And I've had patients that have come up to me years later and shake my hand and say, you know what, sometimes people are kicked out of treatment. And many of these folks move on to become mental health professionals themselves. And of course, the field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners is huge. If you're considering this rewarding career, I urge you to consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. Now, I've known them for a long time at Alliant University. I've spoken at their past events. It was founded in 1969. It's boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. And Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer APA-accredited doctoral programs in clinical psychology that can allow for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. And the faculty is crazy. It's made up of leaders and historical figures like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. For more information, and I worked alongside of these students as well, by the way, in the clinical setting, as well as having lectured at the institution. So for more on the California School of Professional Psychology, CSPP, at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on our website or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu, Alliant.edu.
And welcome back. It is the You Live version of This Life podcast, and appreciate all you out there on Facebook Live. We've got Eden Sassoon in here with us, and her Instagram world, her Lando Instagram. And Mike, we're going to go to calls, and you're in control of that right
now. Yeah, so let me get to Jessica in Washington State. Again, this has a nice good delay, which is useful on a live show. So in a moment, we will be talking to you.
What's your name again? Jessica?
Jessica? Jessica, yes. And we are again joined by Eden Sassoon. It was very nice of you to come in today.
Yeah,
Eden, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure always.
Thank you.
I have a real quick, while we wait for Jessica's call to get on there. Jessica's there, by the way. Hello, Jessica.
Hi, Jessica.
Real quick question. How I always talk about this with like people on MTV shows or The Bachelor or any of that. Hi, Jessica. Real quick. How was it dealing with being on a Real Housewives show being in recovery? That does not seem to compute. Those two do not, because most of those broads are just smashed all the time.
You know, yes. Brandy was in recovery, wasn't she?
No,
Brandy was not.
She's still not, and she's and you know what? I see her for what she is, and she's got has her journey to deal with.
And she's always been nice.
Kim was in and out of recovery, in recovery. Yeah. For me, it was great. I actually got to see them and be like, "Oh, you're gonna wake up feeling like shit tomorrow." I'm sorry. Well, I get to go to the gym and live a beautiful life and just do more for others. So that's why I'm not back this year because
It probably didn't make for a interesting. And I mean this as a compliment. You probably didn't make for a very interesting TV housewife because you were probably self-aware and not drunk.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And so what the people who do admire me kind of come at me and, oh, I love you and I love you for your truth and I love you for all the things that housewives don't represent.
The other thing that for the normie population it's hard to get is that when you're using, it blocks your ability to feel, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And no, normies don't have that. It's not so much. You'd have to use a lot to block our feelings.
Right.
And while with, if you're an addict, the alcohol, the drugs block it. That's why people get nervous about your Klonopin. Like, I would get nervous about that.
Right.
Because I would feel like you're not having your full experience all the time,
right,
and your addiction might kick in a little bit, and then off you go.
Before bed?
I'm just saying, it's that risk, that
risk
that bothers me. And somebody should have discussed that with you in great detail. I don't know if that's happening. But help the average person understand what that's like. That, you know, when you're using even a little bit, the feelings are just sort of blocked.
Numb.
Yeah, numb.
But I can do that with exercise. I can do that with flirting with men. I can do that with shopping if
flirting
need be.
Flirting with men numbs your feeling. It doesn't heighten your feelings.
Well, I get that high.
You get the high.
And then once the high comes off, I'm going back down.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the high numbs your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, want to add to that?
In what sense? Like, what do you mean directly?
Like, well, love is a drug for me.
I just don't think the average person understands the blocking, and that the high blocks feelings, that the next day you can't have feelings, and that ability of the addict brain to be distant from feeling states, even when you're using even a mild amount of behavior.
I mean, I think one of the biggest aspects of empathy is self-awareness. I mean, you have to be you have to have at least some level of appreciation for yourself to be able to share and appreciate other people's feelings. And when you're high and using, especially in an addict capacity, your self-hatred and your self deprecation is so high that it makes it very difficult, almost impossible to embrace other people's feelings or even to acknowledge them. You know?
Okay, so those are two different experiences of addiction, I'm hearing, but both common, which is he goes into the self-loathing and isolates because of that and can't connect, and then you're just numbed. And you find finding behaviors to help you numb. Whether it's high or low, it's numb.
And let me be clear. This self-deprecation, this self-punishment that I went through, it was very selfish. It wasn't as if I see myself as little.
No.
It was indulgent.
Yeah.
You know?
And by numbing, I'm not talking about the kind of numbing we get with trauma. I mean, literally numbing.
Yeah.
Literally in a
Novocaine.
Novocaine kind of numb. All right, Jessica, go ahead.
Jessica, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, baby.
Hi.
Yes.
Nice to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you.
This is where you tell us.
I have a question.
Let's do it.
I have a question, Dr. Drew.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hormone imbalance, and I'm on progesterone cream, and I have leg swelling, and I was wondering if I also have a wedding issue, and I was wondering if that's a pinched nerve and if you know about those conditions.
Nothing you said connected.
Wetting?
Medically.
A wedding? You mean wetting yourself? Like going pee-pee?
Yes.
Okay.
So
it's a wedding condition.
Have you had children?
What is it then?
No, I have not had children. I'm 33 years old, single disabled person. I haven't had children.
Physically disabled from what?
I have autism, sir.
Okay, so Jessica, I'm sorry, but I would have to know more about what's going on medically. What the things you've mentioned don't connect in a significant way. You're talking about, you know,
I have edema.
I understand you have leg edema. I understand you're on progesterone. I understand you have urinary incontinence. Those things don't necessarily line up unless I had a lot more information. So I'm sorry, Jessica. I'd need to sort of look at your medical record to see what's going
on. Should she go to her physician?
Yeah, of course. Go to your doctor, have him or her explain that to you. So I'm guessing there's a lot of stuff going on there neurologically.
Sorry. Thank you for the call, Jessica. I wish.
I have a lot of stuff, but I just thought you might be able to help me.
No, but I would have to see all of it and see what treatments you've had, and it would take I would need a lot more stuff medically to really sort it out. So thank you, though.
There we go. I just wish it would drop faster.
I mean, she probably, you know, maybe wheelchair bound, maybe some spinal issues, maybe some actual brain structural problem. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Jerry calling from the great state of Tennessee. Hello. Thank you for calling. Eden Sassoon is in studio with us.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Ms. Sassoon. Hey, Doc. Hey, Psycho Mike.
What's up?
They also had a Rudy for me, Phil. So I'm one of Vinny's clients. And I know the guy left earlier, but I've been dying to talk to you guys. I've been listening to you guys on Loveline. Yeah, we get it in Tennessee through the internet. We listen on a little app. But listen to you guys for years. Listen to you talk about training on Kevin and Bean. And a lot of times you talked about ketogenic stuff.
Yeah.
But like my girl and I, kind of, we did no sugar, no grain. But I was an Army Ranger, so I come from a training background,
right?
And I used to attack things more like working out, like an obsessive compulsive addiction to physical activity as my form of diet control. And my girl is more like, I don't want to touch a gym for any effing reason. So diet is kind of the thing for her.
Yeah.
If you're, but we need to be kind of on the same plan because we eat together and it's motivational for each other.
That's interesting. How,
if you honestly, unless you are a competitive athlete in something really glycolytic, boxing, MMA, Olympic lifting, then there's no reason why you couldn't be in a ketogenic
similar
state.
Yeah.
Because that's okay, the only real. I live in the gym. I love to train. I love to train hard. If I was going to, and I
literally, he should like throw in some more fruit on the sides when when you're not eating with your girlfriend.
Right, and
that's
and
about
the,
it.
I also Vinny's outlook on no grain is perfect. It really is a great way to look at things. And then if you want to expand on that a little bit, it sounds like you would get a lot out of reading Mark Sisson's book. Of like the Primal Blueprint or Primal Endurance, because he's a fat fueled guy that can also make it a little bit more flexible for people who want to dive into some more glycolytic stuff occasionally.
Yep, there you go, my friend.
Don't you believe to each their own?
When I came back from my, I'm sorry.
No, I was just bringing up a question.
Well, Ian's gonna, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. It's not a bad point.
I think it really is to each their own. I think that people's blood type plays a situation. Well, I think what's...
You're absolutely correct, but he's saying together they influence each other in negative ways when they sit down to eat.
Well, yes, I think...
Because they are so different.
So she has a significant... We both were just naturally, like, we were like naturally good-looking, in-shape people. And then
love it.
And I was a few years older than her. Came back from Iraq, I gained 100 pounds.
Oh!
He gained... Yeah, it was stupid. But and not to put the blame game, but a lot of that was I did not have poor eating habits from as far as eating garbage, but I had poor eating habits in that I never worried about my weight.
Regulate the consumption amount of it. Yeah, you're probably so wildly physically active. I totally get it. No, I mean, how many every professional football player I know or high-level football player Division 1A or college wrestlers, they all go through that same thing where they spend 25, 30 years of their life being able to eat whatever the hell they want, and then all of a sudden it's like it's over. But yeah, no, I agree.
I was a college wrestler.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, so you're so unbelievably.
It was also affected that we're in the South.
Yeah.
And she grew up around more like, I guess you'd say, a multicultural area of eating more of the fried okra and like crazy, stupid Southern food. And I grew up eating healthy, like, you know, healthy stuff like fish and shrimp, but still eating like a dog.
Yeah.
So we affect each other's addiction.
We got it. We got it.
No, I listen.
We got it.
Step one.
We hear you.
Step one. Identify your basal metabolic rate, you know, and it's going to take 2 or 3 weeks of really getting to know how many calories Jerry and Jerry's lady need to put in their body to maintain their body weight. Then, you know, make decrease moderately from there. But you can do that through also regulation of your grains and your sugars, which is where, you know, Vinny's ideas come in. And I think they're very useful.
How does he figure out his basal metabolic needs?
You got to calculate how much you eat for like 3 weeks and see how you fluctuate. If you'll notice very quickly if you're 500-600 calories over, and vice versa.
You just notice also the way you feel.
Yeah.
I mean, numbers don't lie. I get on the treadmill in the morning, and then I go to Pilates, and I know how many calories I'm burning, and then I pretty much know what I can eat that day.
It's a lot of time. This is, you know, when the average person, that's a lot of time exercising, and the average person doesn't have the time to go to the store vegetables or the money to buy vegetables. So it's really –
Yeah, but you say that all the time. And like whenever we talk health and fitness –
I don't want to say all the time. I just want to say – I want to acknowledge that it's hard.
But when you say health and fitness – whenever
we are nuts.
Whenever you talk health and fitness stuff – hold on. Whenever you talk health and fitness stuff, you go, yeah, but I have clients that won't even take a pill. And I go, well, then they're going to be fat and dead.
That's not being a good doctor.
Asking me to be a doctor. They're asking me to get
me to be.
Okay. If the person that can't even take their medication because they're too undisciplined, don't look to me to give you nutrition advice. It's not – we're worlds apart.
I understand.
That was my word, discipline.
Yeah.
I understand. Word. But I live in a world where – I have to try to help people. It's like saying if you don't want to get sober, get the hell out of here.
No, it's not because there's a wild difference. There's many degrees of I'm taking my medication to save my life. That's fine. don't, that person's not going to go to the store and buy the vegetables. Okay, so don't
That's
even
part
ask,
of saving their life, though,
but
sometimes.
But they're not going to do it. If they're not going to do it, they're not going to do it. You can recommend that they do it. But if you're going to say to me that I've also, on top of saying clean up your diet, prescribe them 200 milligrams of so-and-so, they can't even take that every day.
It's hard for them to do it.
Okay, then it's going to be literally impossible for them to read an entire book about dietary guidelines.
That would be impossible.
Follow the guidelines, gauge their better. That's it.
That
it's not going to happen. So I just
That's
go.
Right.
Oh, then you do
but
your
there,
thing.
But there are other.
So you're saying how bad do they want it, and what are they willing to do to make
right,
it happen?
Jerry sounded like the type of guy who definitely is going to follow through that stuff.
I can't get people to go to the gym. That's very hard for people. We all love it, but a lot of people really find it uncomfortable.
See, I try to lead by example. Obviously, we all do, and people are like, "I want to be just like you." I'm like, "Careful what you're asking for," yeah. But. Yes, I can motivate you to get to the gym.
What about but if you're talking in a life-saving capacity, do they have to? Can't they just walk 30 minutes a day?
Yes.
Okay.
That's where I go next.
Okay.
And that's hard to get people to do, or they'll do it for a while and stop. And I just want to acknowledge how hard it is for some people, and my job is to motivationally enhance.
Right.
And to get realistic goals and to get things started.
I agree, but I also think
there are people I've given up on.
From a clinical standpoint,
there's some people who can't.
The clinical standpoint, there is carryover because in a clinical standpoint and from me, just meathead guy, and from Eden giving
Don't
advice.
Don't you dare call me a meathead.
No. But I'm saying I'm sure there's a lot of women who look to you as a motivation and an icon for what they want to look like or how they want to live. And just like you, when someone steps in your office, some people need to stay in their lane. If I see a guy at the gym who's 23 and shredded, and he's like, "What can I do to get to 2% more body fat?" That I'm going to have a completely different set of guidelines than my dad, who's 70 pounds overweight and 70.
Right. And so, Mike, we're talking to a general audience here, I assume. So I just want to acknowledge to the Michael Catherwood father. I'm not sure I should use his real name necessarily.
Everyone knows the Dwight.
Okay, so whether I should have the Dwight Catherwoods represented as well as the meathead in the gym represented.
Right.
We got to kind of acknowledge, everybody we're talking
to. The caveat here is that my dad is probably 150 pounds overweight and 73. I obviously am not going to prescribe to him my workout routine and my diet. But my dad is the guy who will take that pill.
He'll follow.
So that my point was that if you're going to say, you don't understand, I have people that come into my office, it's very hard to get them to even take their medication. I go, well, then why would you even dream of giving them dietary advice?
But then I would take somebody like your dad and I go, hey, very good, well done. You seem to want to take care of yourself. I hate to give you medication for something we could correct with diet.
You got to stop.
Go to hell. And so there's... you have to get philosophical at a certain
point. That's exactly it. I always ask my clients who come in and do Pilates, and they're like, I want to be just like you. I said, no, you don't. But tell me exactly what you want.
Yeah,
right.
And until they can really understand what they want and then what it's going to take them to get there, that's up to them.
Right. And I totally understand any girl of any age wanting to look like Eden. I totally get it. But the goal should really be to be the best you.
Exactly.
Not because I've suffered from that.
Be the best you, and some would argue that lead the best life.
Right.
And that for some people is a good life. Some people it's an enjoyable life. It has different meanings to different people.
I will tell you
but
to a large...
Being the best you and leading the best life may separate.
I will tell to a large portion of the population, including a large portion of the people that listen to this podcast, working out the way I do, eating the way I do, living my life the way I do, will preclude you from living your best life.
Maybe.
Because it works for me.
Yeah,
but I'm saying my point is that there's absolutely no guarantee that by getting in better shape or eating a certain way that it's going to get you your best
life.
That's
right. Two quick stories. One, I'm going to be on the Partially Examined Life. It's a philosophy podcast. I'm freaked out and excited about it next week, I think. And
talk about
existentialism. Wes Alwyn from that. Yes. Ugh. Wes Alwyn from that podcast is on the Dr. Drew podcast right now. And I asked him, and I said, I sometimes have to become philosophical. Let's describe to people what philosophy is supposed to do. And he goes, well, how to lead an ethical life, it's a little bit about politics, but ultimately it's about how to lead a good life. I go, I'm glad you said that. How do you lead the good life from a philosophical perspective? He goes, I have no idea. I go, well, the whole project is now, you've said the whole philosophical project is a failure. That's what you've said.
No.
So I'm starting with that, going to their podcast.
That's why, I think, why philosophy still exists after you know, 7,000 years.
I've been spending the last couple weeks preparing for this.
It's because they don't know the answer
and
still.
And I am deep in Hegel and Levinas and Sartre. Yeah. And I'm telling you, it has been a very satisfying experience.
Yeah.
It's really depressing, the Sartre, once you get into the postmodernism.
Forget the
it's very, very depressing.
Derrida on that crap, forget it. But Sartre, I always hated. I've got a little more respect for him.
Huge dong.
Hegel, I'm suddenly deeply invested in, and Levinas can go, waste of time.
I wrote a book called Hegel and Cream Cheese. We'll get into it.
That's funny.
Anything before this first day of love we want to, before we wrap up? Anybody want to hear from on Facebook or Instagram? Or
no, I think that we're about ready to close this one up.
Eden, thank you. Really, it's always a privilege.
Thank you for having me.
Soon, everyone.
It's a very always. We've gone in different directions with you a couple of times now, right? It's been really fun both times. And
I listen a lot more than I talk, which is good thing.
People tell you look like Marissa Miller.
I've gotten that.
You do a lot.
You bring it, and I appreciate you bringing it. I appreciate you being here. And, you know, not just listening, but engaging. And
sincere appreciation for you coming out today. I'm sure you got a lot.
So let's get all your stuff. No. What Beauty Giving Back? What can people find there? What if they want to?
Oh, BeautyGivesBack.care. Yes, it's .care. It's uniting the beauty industry and helping end the water crisis. And then Eden Sassoon is my personal Instagram. Sass Eden on Twitter, and of course Eden by Eden Sassoon at the salon, and Eden by Eden Sassoon Pilates.
Mike, anything you want to promote before we go?
At Mike Catherwood on every outlet.
Everything. Go to Dr.com. Again, appreciate you guys on Facebook, and we'll all, you know, check that Dr. Drew podcast, the Adam and Drew podcast. What's that?
KBC.com.
Well, it's not KBC.com. It's not KBC.com. It's like, I think it's KBCRadio.com.
No, KBC.com.
KBC.com will send you to ABC Television in Los Angeles. It's not KBC.com.
Okay, do KBC790.com.
Yes, KBC790. All right, we'll see you next time.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about. You live.